Welcome to Mighty Parenting, the podcast with real, raw, and relevant talk about raising teens and parenting young adults.
Welcome to Mighty Parenting, where we help you raise teens and parent 20-somethings so they can become happy, successful, and emotionally healthy adults. I'm your host, Sandy Fowler, and today we have a kind of a double bang for your buck. We are doing a Q&A show, and we are introducing our new Mighty Parenting podcast sponsor, Acree. So we have a few different questions from you guys that we're going to be tackling. I'm also going to be telling you a little bit about our new sponsor, and I'm doing it in the Q&A show because they actually help solve problems that you guys have been writing into us about. So let's start with the first problem, and that ties into our kids and their learning how to write. You know, this is a key skill. Anywhere you go, any college you go to, any recruiter you speak to, any job application that you're looking at turning in, anytime you look at a job ad board, you will see that kids need effective communication skills, generally oral and written. And a lot of our kids are struggling to learn to write. You guys have also written into us to ask, you know, how we can inspire our kids to want to do their homework, get them to complete assignments. You also asked us how we can accommodate our kids' growing independence. And one of the areas that we need to accommodate that is in doing schoolwork. Well, when it comes to teaching kids how to write, you know, teachers, they don't have enough time to sit down with each child as a child is crafting an essay and to give continuous feedback so that that child can see just how the changes they make impact their work or which areas of their work need more focus. When we give them music lessons, they're working one-on-one with a music teacher who sits there with them while they're playing an instrument and makes adjustments and tweaks. Teachers can't do that when it comes to writing. They don't have enough time, and they're not at your house in the evening when your kid is actually doing their homework. Or if you have teenagers, there's a very good chance that they may be doing their homework way late at night. By the time they finish all of their activities and maybe get a little bit of a rest time in, get a dinner in, they can be doing homework quite late into the evening. So this falls to parents. But as parents, we don't necessarily have the skills. Yes, I have basic writing skills, but I don't necessarily know how to teach my child how to craft an essay. I don't necessarily know all the rules of grammar. My writing is good enough for what I'm doing, but I want them to have better and I want them to have more. And then there's the world of, yes, I know how to do this, but that doesn't mean you're going to be able to teach your child to do it. It was funny when the girls were very young, when we started homeschooling, they were first and third grade. And the problem area that we had actually was math, which is hysterical because I'm a math major. That's what I majored in college. But there was just something about our relationship, the way we communicate, something interfered with that. And I know my husband has the same thing with some of his clients. He's a math tutor, and he has clients who will come to him, and they'll be like, I know math. I know how to do math. And maybe they're an engineer or something in a field where they actually are utilizing math on a regular basis. But there's just something in that parent-child relationship that's not allowing the kid to learn from the parent. Could be lots of different things. Could be attitude, could be communication style, could be lots of different things. But regardless of the reason, this is all kind of leaving our kids hanging out there. And so they're struggling to learn these writing skills. And what they need to be able to do is they need to be able to write, they need to be able to practice, and they need to get feedback while they're doing it. They need to be able to see what's going on with their work. Well, this is where our new sponsor comes in. as I said, they are a Cree, and they help our kids by having an interactive editor where the kids can go in and they can put in their essay, and then the AI goes through and it assesses the key aspects of quality writing. It looks through their work for those things. So it's going to look at the organization, the argumentation, how they use evidence and analysis. And it's beautiful because they can get as much help as they need, as much as they're willing to accept, right there in the moment when they're working, wherever they're working, whatever time of day they're working on it. And Acree was built by two co-founders who had both sides of this coverage. You have Jamie Haidt, who has a PhD in the humanities, and then you have Robin Donaldson, who has a PhD in computer science. And they knew how frustrating it could be to try and get a writing assignment done, to do something, turn it in, wait a long time, and then get really vague feedback. They know that that's not helping kids learn. So they set out and they created Acree to help solve that problem. So now kids have a way to get unlimited practice. They can put in as many drafts as they need. They can do it anytime. They can do it anywhere. They're going to get high quality feedback. They get immediate and targeted feedback on those key elements of their writing, and it's been proven to boost success. Students have been shown to become better writers when using Acree, and the more they struggled, the worse their writing was when they started, the greater, the more significant their increase in score levels after using this. So, if you find that you're struggling, that your child is struggling, that you are a parent who is stepping in and overhelping, or it's hurting your relationship as you're trying to help your child learn, or even if they're doing okay and you just want them to hone those skills more, this is definitely something to check out. You can go to, of course, mightyparenting.com. We have a sponsors page where you can learn a little bit more about Acree and click through there to their website, or you can just go to acree.com. That's ECREE.com. Check it out, see what it's all about and how it might be able to help your family, help your student get better skills and help you lower your stress or improve your relationship by not having to be so involved in that piece of the homework process. Now it is time for our second question, and that one is, how can we parent to accommodate our children's growing independence? And that's kind of a biggie, isn't it? It's really challenging for parents. We need to encourage our kids to have fun and relax and enjoy their youth, to not grow up too fast, and we need to keep an eye on them, keep them safe, while we're still encouraging them to grow up and to become more independent, even knowing that the culmination of that is for them to move out and separate from us and kind of go live their own life, which can be a little sad to think about, but that's how we know we did our job well, right? Is when they reach their full potential. They are able to be as independent as they were created to be. So I think the key to doing this is remembering that this is a two-sided coin. Independence is great, and that's the thing that our kids need, and in a sense they clamor for, you know, I want to make my own decisions. But independence comes with responsibility. Those are two sides of the same coin, privileges and responsibility, and that's what creates independence. And I think that's something that our teens and 20-somethings don't think about, and we as parents tend to forget about. When they want more privileges, we can often struggle with that. You know, it might be too hard to say yes, or after we say yes, it may feel like we're being taken advantage of or taken for granted. So how can we really do that? What might giving them more privileges along with responsibility look like in the real world? So let's look at a specific example. One would be a driver's license, because that's a big, big whomping milestone. And that's something that not all kids, because I know neither of mine were chomping at the bit for that, but, you know, a lot of kids are chomping at the bit for it, and regardless, once they get it, they expect to have a lot more independence once they have that little piece of plastic in their hand. And so while this is really a big deal, I also think that we tend to let an opportunity pass us by here. Our kids get a license and suddenly they want our car keys and they're gone, or we give them a car of their own and they're gone. And I know that having a teen who can drive can be a big relief for us and a big help in our crazy busy lives. But it's also a great time to allow our kids to take on the responsibility that comes with this privilege of driving. And that means that they need to take some responsibility for the car. Now, I can hear people going, oh, they can't afford it, blah, blah, blah. I know. And there are many ways that they can be responsible for the car. Yes, of course, you can have them buy their own car or pay for their insurance. But those are big ticket items. And sometimes that just isn't really going to work well. So that's fine. If that's the case, then you can give them a non-money related responsibility, or you can have them, you know, if it is something that they can afford to do, or you think they should be able to afford to do, you can also collect that money from them and just set it aside, put it away, and give it back to them when they're ready to do whatever they're doing post-secondary. If they're going to college or moving into their own apartment or maybe doing a trade school or culinary school, you can gift that money back to them to help with expenses at that time if you want. Or like I said, you can just go with the non-financial ways of helping to take care of the car. Because there are things that don't cost as much or don't cost anything. So they could cover maintenance costs of the car or just the oil changes on the car. They can pay for just the gas they use, you know, or you can cover the oil changes or the gas or the repair costs, whatever. But they can be the one who has to actually take the vehicle into the mechanic to get the oil changed or to get the new brakes put on, even though you're footing the bill. It could be their contribution is the time of going and taking care of that. Obviously, with supervision, if it's more than an oil change, you know, you'd need to be part of that process, but they can go along with you, or they can be sent in after you talk to the mechanic on the phone. They can also be the person who goes to fill up the tank, regardless of who is paying for the gas. They can still be the guy who drives it up to the gas station and fills that up. They can be responsible for cleaning the car. They can have to shovel out the accumulated stuff each week. They can wash it on a regular basis, wax it annually, or maybe you wax it 3 times a year, whatever. They can wash the windows. Or if someone in your house does the vehicle maintenance, then they can help. They can help mom or dad or big brother or big sister actually work on the car when they're doing that maintenance. It doesn't really matter so much what it is. It's just allowing them the opportunity to experience both sides of that driving privilege, the freedom and the responsibility. Now, for us, you know, and everybody's different, but one of the things we did with our girls is we knew that having them pay for their own car or their insurance wasn't really going to work. And we didn't run out and buy a car right away either. So what we did is we made them responsible for paying for the gas they used to go to work or if they were taking a road trip. If they were working, then we knew they had the money to cover the gas, so we didn't have to worry about that. And if they wanted to take a road trip for fun and they didn't have enough money for gas, well, that really begs a whole question of why don't you have that money? And it presents an opportunity for a good conversation around the idea of, all right, you know, here's something you want to do. How can you afford to do it? And just open that line of thinking for them rather than getting stuck in the, oh, I can't afford it mindset, which we don't like to promote or encourage. We also never gave our kids a car. So we're a family of four. And when our girls got their licenses, which, like I said, neither of them did at 16, they weren't that excited about it. They waited a while. But when they got their licenses, we still had 2 cars for quite a while. And when we did get a 3rd car, we didn't give it to them. It was our car. It was mine and Tom's. And the girls were allowed to use it. And even when we had four vehicles, which we did for one summer, they still all belonged to mom and dad. When we had the four, we went, okay, you're driving this car, you're driving that car, so you are responsible for that vehicle. And they had to pay for their gas, pay for their oil changes, and we handled any big repairs. But like when my daughter was, not just summer, when they did internships too. So when my daughter was on her internship, you know, there was an alignment that needed to take place because she was driving all over Detroit and there were potholes everywhere. And that's part of owning a car. And she was on a paid internship. So yes, we did. We let her cover that. We just, you know, we figured she was fortunate that we'd given her a car. And again, this is learning. This is a process for them. So they were financially and physically responsible for the cars during the summers or the internships when they used them. Then during the school year, we did some juggling around because my husband, the car that he had at that point, he didn't want to drive during the winter. So he put his into storage and drove the kids' car. And for that while, when we had four, we had the fourth, we had his in storage. We had the fourth one just parked at the front corner of the driveway and put both those cars under storage insurance, which if you don't know about is absolutely nothing. It's totally dirt cheap. And so when they were at college, unless they could buy themselves a car, they didn't have one. And since they didn't buy themselves cars, they didn't want to spend their money on that, they didn't have them. And that was fine. That worked well for us. So this actually had the side benefit of them learning how to take care of a vehicle. The fact that we gave them some responsibility for it meant that they learned about cleaning it and getting oil changes and doing preventive maintenance and getting repairs. And we helped walk them through the bigger things, but we did let them handle things. Another real world thing that we can talk about is money. So money is, I guess it's like a big broad issue. And there are tons of aspects to that, but there are definitely ways to allow our kids to become more independent when it comes to finances. One kind of a common starting place is letting them cover their own personal expenses. Yes, we're going to feed them and shelter them and clothe them and buy the things that we deem necessary for them. But the older they get, the more of their personal expenses that they can pay for. Another is to ask them to help make decisions about the family budget. Now, I'm not saying you have to sit down and tell them how much money you make and show them your whole budget, but you can share a particular situation or a piece of the budget. You know, you can ask them to help plan the family vacation, and included in that is, this is how much money we are willing to spend on this vacation. So what we do needs to fit within this. And weighing in on that, one, just makes them feel good. And two, it helps you plan a family vacation that they're going to be happier about and more pleased about being on with you. And three, it gives them some responsibility for selecting what happens and helps them understand what things cost and how that fits into the budget. And again, gives that flip side of the coin. Yes, we have the privilege of going on this family vacation, and there are responsibilities that come with that. You could also allow them to start managing some of the money that you spend on them. I mean, let's face it, we spend a lot of money on our kids, starting with food, clothing, and shelter, but extending into clothes, cars, activities, and a myriad of other things. So let them be responsible for some of that money. Now, again, that doesn't mean you have to hand over a wad of cash and just watch them blow it. You can start out, take baby steps, you know, you can start out by letting them make the decisions while you're actually still paying the bill and handling the money. Or you can give them a small amount of money where the consequences of mishandling it are not really damaging. So let's look at some possibilities along those lines. What if you gave them money to buy their school lunches? Here's the money. You need to go pay for lunches. And I can hear a lot of people going, oh my gosh, my kid would just take it and blow it on something else. Okay, so what? You know, the caveat here was, hey, honey, here's the money for your school lunches. I am putting you in charge of your lunches. Now, that means that if they don't put that money toward their lunches, if they spend it on something else, then they're going to manage the fallout from that decision. They're going to be the ones who have to make sure that there is food in the house to make a lunch with, and they're the ones who are going to have to make the lunch. Don't take over the responsibility of the fallout or the consequences of the choice that they made. Let them experience it. And I know that their pain can become our pain, but you're a mighty parent. You got this. You can do this. I know that you can stick it out because that is how they learn. And you can do it for a shorter time period. You know, don't do it for the whole year or the whole semester to start with. Just give them a month. Do something smaller. And I realize that a lot of times with the electronic payment systems and things in schools, this can be trickier. But can you give them access to that system? Can you let, you know, give them the money to put into their bank account and then put into the system, or to write a check to put in the system, or however your school works it? Bring them into that world a step at a time. Another area I mentioned is clothes. So when it's time to shop for clothes, you can figure out what you think they need and how much you're willing to spend on those items. Then when you go shopping, you can tell them, you say, this is what I think you need and how much I'm willing to allocate for those items. And you get to choose. You can pick whatever you want. You pick it. I will pay for it. But this is all the money that there is to pay for this. So if you decide to spend it all on one outfit, you're going to be wearing the same thing to school every day, and you're going to be washing it, because I'm not going to do a load of laundry every night to make sure that you have clean clothes for the next day. So think about it and think it through while you're picking stuff. And then really do that. Let them make the choices. And if they blow it all on one outfit, let them do the laundry every day. Let them wear that outfit to school every day. Because chances are, if they're a kid who cares so much about what they're wearing that they would spend all the money on one outfit, they're not a kid who's going to go to school with dirty clothes and it's going to bother them that they're wearing the same outfit every day. So that won't last long. The other thing is you can graduate them. You know, initially I said, let them just make the decision about what they're going to buy. And then, you know, next step would be, here's the debit card, or here's the envelope of cash. You actually pay for it. And again, you can be with them while they're shopping. Next step might be that you give it to them and they can shop on their own. And this is a building up over time kind of thing. You can also start with just giving them the money for, hey, you know, you need new jeans for school. So here's the money for the jeans. And you can expand that until it reaches the point where you're giving them, this is your money for the school year to buy what you need to buy. But again, like I said, they have to live with the result of the choices, because that's the only way they can learn. Now, the same thing can happen in reverse. You know, I said this idea of if they spend it all on one outfit, they might get everything they need, but not use all the money that you allocated. They might find some great deals, or they might decide to buy less expensive brands. And then there's this money left. So what do you want to do about that? Well, you can tell them that if they have money left over, it's theirs. And you have to think about this a little before you open your mouth and do it. This is a little bit of a judgment call. You have to know your own child and have some idea of what they might do. And also, let me tell you, start doing these things, you might be surprised. I know I had surprises along the way about decisions that my kids made. But before you go and say, hey, any money left is yours, you want to think about that. Because now you might have a kid who buys one outfit, but they aren't a kid who cares about their appearance. They're the one who you have trouble getting into the shower on a regular basis. And they're going to buy one pair of jeans and one t-shirt and go, cool, I got all this money for a video game or gas for the car, whatever it is that they want to do, buy their junk food, go out. They've got something that they like, something they're going to want to spend that money on. So this flip side, you have to think through a little bit, and you, again, might need to take some baby steps. You know, hey, honey, If there's money left over at the end of this, then we'll talk about something cool or fun we can do to spend it at the end of the school year. You know, first we got to make sure that whatever you buy gets you through the year. And if what you buy gets you through the year and there was money left over, then great. You know, we will use the money to do something cool. You can, if you think that they're a kid who can manage it, you can say, if there's money left over, it's yours at the end of the school year. Or if there's money left over now, it's yours. However you think that would work out. But just like I said, think that through a little bit, because while it's an incentive and it's an experience that might land you in a situation that you're not willing to live with, like sending your kid to school in the same dirty clothes every day. Another place that you can share some financial responsibility is for their activities. Most activities cost money in one way or another. So let them make the decisions about how it's spent. Maybe it's choosing the activity. Maybe it's how the money is spent within the activity. I know one of my girls was the activity queen, and I instituted this practice really just as a way of taking some of the stress and pressure off me, because I didn't like having to pick and choose and say, well, you can do this activity and you can't do that one. Or to do a whole bunch of stuff at the beginning of the year, and I would feel tapped out both, you know, financially, but also from just a time and an energy standpoint, hauling her and helping her, getting her to the store to get the things she needs to do something, and all the stuff that falls on parents when our kids do an activity. So I instituted this practice where I said, okay, there's time and there's money. So here's your budget for the semester or the year for your activities. So you figure out which things you want to do based on that. And you have to come talk to me and your father and tell us exactly what we need to do. Like, we need to drive you to practice, or we're going to need to get you to an off-location site for a week. Whatever it is, you need to let us know what's required of us, and we have to okay it. But on the financial side, I gave her the money and said, you know, you got to pick and choose, and you need to think about your time and your money when you do that. So you can give them responsibility for just picking that. Some activities, they have choices within it on how money's going to be spent for stuff. So you can do that. And again, you know, you start with baby steps. You start with going, okay, it's the beginning of the year and you're doing stuff and you have activities and we have this much money. Let's talk it through together. And eventually it gets to the point where they can manage it all on their own. Hopefully, right? Another place that we can give kids some responsibility is Christmas. And this is an interesting one. If you were around last year, you know that I am a stress relief coach, and one of the areas I have worked on is the holidays. So one thing I can tell you is the vast majority of Christmas stuff is done by mom. And most of the Christmas presents are purchased by mom, no matter who they're to or who they're from. It's mom out there doing most of that in most cases. So whether it's mom or dad or whatever, you can bring your kids into it. So how do you bring your kids into Christmas? Well, one is they can go shopping with you. It can be, hey, we as a family give gifts to grandma and grandpa and this aunt, this uncle, this friend, this neighbor. You get to help me this year. You get to help me pick out what we're going to do. So that's one way you can do it. You can have them come with you. Or when they're giving gifts to people, because this happens too, right? We go out and get the gift for them to give to their teacher, their music instructor, their coach, their whoever, their grandparents, whoever they personally are signing a card saying this gift is from me, make them responsible for getting that gift. Once they hit that point where they're old enough and have their own credit card, or if they're younger and have a debit card, you can tell them, you pay for it, give me the receipt, and I will pay you back. I will reimburse you for that. So they can do gift buying. They can also be responsible for wrapping gifts, whether it's their gifts or all the gifts. They can put up the Christmas lights or do cleaning before the decorating starts. Whatever you think is reasonable for them. Again, the idea is just to give them some of the responsibility. They get the fun and the joy of celebrating Christmas, and that's great. And when they're really little, yeah, they shouldn't have to do a whole lot. But the sooner that we start bringing them into the process and slowly adding to what they do there, the less it feels like a chore or a punishment or like responsibilities are heavy. It just feels a little more natural. Like, this is what's happening. This is Christmas. This is our family getting ready for Christmas together. So responsibility is, I'm thinking about that as I say, it's something that needs to grow over time, and it needs to grow in all the areas of their lives. So it also means we need to give them more opportunities to make decisions about their life and their time. And in addition to those types of things that I just talked about, where it's a little bit more concrete, we can, in small ways, just on a daily basis, start making that shift. We can shift from telling them what to do and when to do it to telling them what needs to be done and then asking them when they think they can get it done. And then we can shift again by asking them what they think needs to be done and when they'll have it done. Now, this can apply, let's go real world example again, right? This can apply to schoolwork, chores, preparation for events, packing for vacation. It's a process, and we can help them out by prompting them with leading questions. Let's start with chores. And it might look something like this. Johnny, your chores this week are cleaning the half bath, taking out the trash, and mowing the lawn. The bathroom needs to be cleaned on Tuesday. The trash needs to be emptied each day and the bins taken out to the curb on Thursday and the lawn mowed on Saturday. And along with that, you might write that down on a chore chart. You might give them a note. You might have them put it on their calendar, depending on their age and how they manage their time. You would actually walk through that whole process with them. And then in a next stage, it might look like, hey, Johnny, your chores this week are cleaning the half bath, taking out the trash, and mowing the lawn. When will you be doing those things? And then you listen to their answer, and you make sure that they write it down wherever, in their calendar or on a piece of paper or post it on your family's chore list, wherever that happens. And then you hold them accountable to the time frame that they gave you. And then the next graduation of this might look like, hey, Johnny, you know, we're deciding who's doing what this week. What do you think would be good chores for you to do this week? What works in your world? And then asking, after you've selected their chores, when will you get this done? And then just holding them accountable to that time frame. And also, you heard me say, you know, what do you think your chore should be? That's a conversation. That's a negotiation, because it's not just what do they want to do. This is a big picture of what everybody in the family is doing for their responsibilities that week. Whether you just split up cleaning chores for the house or you split up all the responsibilities of taking care of a family, however you want to do that, but you're bringing them into that conversation a little bit more of who does everything. And this general idea works for homework too. You know, you can start out laying out what needs to be done and walking them through completing their assignments, right? When they're little and you came home from school, what happened in school today? And you're helping them unpack the backpack. You're looking for the notes from the teacher. You're looking online. We're seeing what the assignments are, making sure they do them, have it all packed up to turn back in. Okay, so we start there. But over time, we are going to walk them through learning to do this by themselves. Over time, you're going to ask what needs to be done and then walking them through completing the assignments. Later on, you're going to ask what needs to be done and what their plan is for completing it. And eventually, you're not going to participate at all. You're going to let them handle all their homework, all their assignments on their own. And this time frame is different for every child. And the steps that you're going to go through are going to be smaller. You know, you're not going to make big, huge jumps. It's moving slowly from one thing to the next. But slowly, it's you stop taking the responsibility for it. But you don't just leave them in the lurch. You ask them those leading questions. What do you think? What needs to happen? When can you do this? Are there things that might get in your way? And help them learn to think through setting up a plan for themselves. So looking at why we're doing responsibilities, why we're passing that along to them, is because we want them to grow. We want them to have that independence, right? Another reason we might be doing it is that we're hearing a lot of complaining from our teen that we aren't treating them like an adult, right? We've all heard that. I'm not a baby. I can do this. I am old enough to handle this. I should be able to because I am such and such age. And they're not entirely wrong. I mean, yes, they may be wrong in some things at some times, but they are growing up. They are getting older. There are times where things should change, where the roles should change, where their privileges should change, but their responsibilities need to change too. And usually when that complaint comes, when it really grates on us, is we hear, you know, you're not treating me like a grown-up. You're not treating me like an adult. And that is true. If you were treating them like an adult, they would be living somewhere else, paying their own bills, doing their own laundry, making their own decisions, staying up as late as they want, and not answering to you. And you know that that's not appropriate, right? You know it's not appropriate to just boot them out the door and go, great, you're an adult, go take care of your own stuff. So you'd like to talk about it and find the right balance with them. So ask them what they think is appropriate. Find out what they want. You know, tell them, say, hey, I get it. I hear you. I agree with you. I'm not treating you like an adult because if I was, this is what it would look like. So ask them, you know, what do you think is appropriate? And then think about it. And remember that when they say, well, I think this is what should be done, you don't have to answer them right in that moment. It is absolutely perfectly reasonable to say, that's very interesting. Let me think about it and let's talk about it again. Fill in the blank, but pick a time. You know, let's talk about it again tomorrow after school, or let's talk about it again on Saturday morning. But let them know that there's a specific follow-up time. Don't just leave them hanging because that can feel uncomfortable and dismissive to them. So then do what you said. Think about it. Think about their request. Is it reasonable? Do they have the maturity to do it? Could you let them try and allow them to learn from success or failure, even if you are quite certain that they're going to fail? And then is it balanced? If they're asking for a privilege, which is typically what they're doing, right? They want privileges. Are they also being responsible? Starting with, have they been responsible with the things that are already considered their responsibilities? Have they lived up to those? Are they following the family rules? Are they being a responsible part of the family in the way you have expected them to do so in the past? If not, that can be the conversation is, you know, I hear you asking for this and saying that you're ready for more privileges. My concern is that I'm not seeing that you're actually being responsible with the ones that you already have. And you can go there. If they have been responsible for the things that you've expected, then look at it and go, okay, are they ready to take on some more responsibility? Do they need to take on some more responsibility to balance these new privileges? So if they say something like, hey, I want to stay up later, or I don't want you telling me when to go to bed, you could decide that they can have autonomy over their sleep schedule. But also talk about the concept of the balance of privilege and responsibility. So when you're an adult, no one tells you when to go to bed, but no one wakes you up for work. No one talks to your boss for you if you're late. No one brings you your lunch or work that you forgot at home. So you tell them, you know, I do, I hear you, and I believe you can handle being responsible for managing your own sleep schedule as well as handling the other things that come with it. So remember that you can go to bed when you want, but you also need to get yourself up, get ready for school, and get to school on time. And if you're running around, you're busy, and you forget stuff, you're going to have to figure out how to manage without it. And then let them do that. If they agree, let them try it and let them manage it. And if they miss the carpool or the bus or they miss the time that you're supposed to take them to school, then they have to get themselves there. They can walk, they can ride a bike, they can call an Uber and pay for it. they can go to the office, they can talk to their teachers, they can do whatever they need to do at school to manage the situation. And if they fail, give them time to sort it. Don't jump in and yell or lecture. I knew you were going to do that. You didn't do this. You screwed it up the first day. Okay, so if they screwed it up the first day, let them live with the consequences. Let them have time to learn from that. We all make mistakes. We learn by screwing it up and fixing it. So let them do that. If you feel like you do need to talk to them, which certainly is a reasonable response at some point, rather than that jumping in and yelling or lecturing, maybe simply, you know, like I said, let it go initially. And if it's happening a few days in a row or you just feel like it's time to jump in, then do it when you're calm, not when you're triggered by it. Wait till you're calm and then do something like, hey, it seems like you're struggling with this. Let's talk about it after school today. And when it's time for the conversation, well, and that's another key. So, you know, when you're doing this, when you're calm, they might be harried. They might be trying to get ready to go out the door when you go, you know, I see you're struggling with this. Let's talk about it after school today. Even if it's after school or the evening and they have time, I don't recommend having the conversation right that moment because you've been thinking about it. You've been planning and preparing for it. They're blindsided by you wanting to talk about it. So do that. Give them that introduction. Hey, it seems like you're struggling. Let's set up a time to talk about it and see if there's anything I can do to help you out. And pick a time then that you're going to get together and sit down and have a conversation and let them have a say also in what that time would be. And then when you sit down, ask them, ask what's going on. What do they think is causing the problem? What could they do to change that? This teaches responsibility and problem-solving skills. This is how they learn those. They practice them. And initially, you have to help walk them through those questions and learn those problem-solving skills. But they don't learn it by us solving it for them. They learn by us asking pertinent questions. The other thing that's really cool about this is that it shows your child that you actually do think they can manage it. Because they're probably expecting you to jump in and say, see, I told you so, this doesn't work. Or you didn't do it, you're out of there. So it shows them that you think that they can manage it. And it also lets them know that you have respect for them and that you trust them to do this. And there might be a point where the conversation needs to be more something more along the lines of, hey, maybe this was just too big of a leap right now. What if we scale it back? And ask for their ideas or make a suggestion for a plan that still gives them more freedom and responsibility than they had originally, but maybe not quite as much as they tried to bite off right now. This was, you know, this was a little bit bigger bite than we can all chew right now. How about we scale back on this and see what they say? And if they have great ideas and a great plan for, no, I can do this, and this is, then you can say, I hear you, and how are you going to do it? What ways do you have of solving the problems of getting over the hurdles that are in your way? And listen to them. And if it makes sense, let them try that. So I've been talking so far really about things primarily from a teen perspective, but there's another piece to this puzzle. And that is when our kids have graduated from high school. And these things are even more important at that point. Because they often feel once they've passed that 18th birthday that this means they're an adult and they should get to do anything they want. And it's true that they're an adult. And as I said earlier, that would also mean that if they were truly fully an adult, they would be paying their own way, taking responsibility for all aspects of their life. And so the conversation can actually be the same as what you were talking about, what we said with the teen. You know, tell them, you hear what they're saying. And ask what they think it means to be an adult. And then work your way through the conversation to find a middle ground, a place where they're allowed to make more of their own decisions and take on more responsibility. In those conversations, the key is respect and courtesy. It gets interesting when you have an adult child living in your home, decisions they make and the way they live. Even if it's something reasonable for their age, it affects everyone in the household. And many times the conversation will come back to the impact that they're having on other people. So, for example, my daughter has graduated from college, but she's still working short-term jobs in her field to get the experience required for a full-time position. Don't even get me started on how that situation works. It's just crazy to me. But she's living with us for the moment as she goes through this interim step. And she does her own laundry. She is expected to cook a few of the family meals each week. She has chores that need to be done. She manages her own car, her own money, all those kinds of things. And those are things she's expected to do because they're just part of living in a home, right? This is stuff that needs to be done. And if you're living here, you have to help carry the load. If she wants to live here for a while after finding a full-time job, she knows this, that she'd also have to pay rent. And it would be proportionate because she's just renting a room, right? So it's not going to be $1,000 a month, but it would be some kind of rent. And what she doesn't know is that we would quietly save that money and give it back to her later on. Maybe when she moves out, to help her out with things she needs for her apartment or the moving costs or whatever happens. But we would hang on to that and give it back to her. It's just a way of helping them adjust to life in stages. You know, that idea of, again, there are responsibilities. So if you're a working adult, one of the responsibilities is you have to pay for a roof over your head, and you can make that appropriate and proportionate to your situation. But she's also in her 20s and she wants to hang out at her friends' places until the wee hours of the morning. But I can't sleep if I don't know that she's made it home safely. I mean, I know when she's at her friend's house, that's fine. They're safe. They're just hanging out. So what do we do about that? You know, I could certainly say, you know, you're living under our roof, and that means you live by our rules. And our rule is you have to be home by 11 or home by midnight. Yeah, it's true that if she's living under our roof, she has to live by our rules. But what are our rules? And why does each of those rules exist? It doesn't really matter what time she comes home. What matters is that I can't sleep. So that's the conversation. This conversation isn't about rules. It's about courtesy and caring. So the conversation is something more like, honey, you really should be able to hang out with your friends and are definitely old enough and responsible enough to run your own social life and manage your own sleep. But when you're out until 1 or 2 or even later in the morning, then I can't sleep and that messes me up. Do you have any ideas on how we can solve this? And then you can brainstorm together. And the situation actually came up recently for us. Not that we had to have the conversation, because we've already had this conversation when my girls were in high school and we came up with a solution that still works for us. But the situation keeps essentially popping up in that this is what's going on. So what happened in high school, even though it wasn't, 1, 2, 3 in the morning, it was earlier. I am an early to bed, early to rise person. So even them staying out till 11 or maybe midnight was rough on me. So we had this plan and we came up with what I call the texty thing. Super high tech name. I know it's going to be really, really tough to remember that one, but we call it the texty thing. And essentially what happens is they're hanging out at a friend's house. So I'm not worried about, did something happen to them in general? I'm just worried about, did they make it from friend's house to home? Okay. So our deal is that however far they are from their friend's house, in high school, they were only 5 or 10 minutes away. Now it can be a lot farther. It can be a half hour, 45 minutes, whatever. So the deal is they tell their friend, I will text you when I get home. If you don't hear from me in X amount of time, so if they're 10 minutes away, we'll say if you don't hear from me in 20 minutes. If she, the other day when this was happening, she was 45 minutes from home. So it was, if you don't hear from me within an hour, if you don't get a text from me within an hour, you have to call my mother. So I can now go to bed because I know that if there's a chance something happened to my child, I'm going to get a phone call from one of their friends. And I also have the friends' numbers, so I can obviously contact them. But this way, I can sleep because I know someone's going to wake me up if there's a chance that something happened to my kid, as opposed to the what we were doing before, which was when you're leaving your friend's house, text me. And then obviously I knew when they got home, but that just didn't work so well. This way I can sleep. They're learning about living with people and being respectful. We're all practicing our problem-solving skills. And it works. It's just having those conversations of, okay, we all live here together. What you want to do impacts other people. So let's look at your impact on us and our impact on you of making you do things a certain way or not letting you do things. And let's talk about that and find something that works. And the bottom line is always still, this is my house. These are my rules. There is a point at which that becomes the conversation. And I do understand that. But I think we jump to that really quickly sometimes. And so accommodating our kids' growing independence, which was the original question, means doing the work, taking the time to have these conversations and to teach them these skills along the way. I think it's something that falls by the wayside. When they're little, we know we have to teach them how to tie their shoes and zip their zippers. We have to teach them how to feed themselves. And sometimes I think we forget that we have to be actively teaching skills as they're getting older. And growing independence definitely takes a lot of skills. So while accommodating our kids' growing independence isn't always easy, and it means that things are frequently changing, it is. It's a process, and every kid and every family is different, so you need to feel your way through it. But it is essential to our children's growth, and it helps them build the skills and the resiliency that they need to successfully move into adulthood and move out on their own. Even though it can be painful when our kids take steps toward their independence, you know, that process of pulling away is essential. So we need to remember to just keep our eye on the prize. Remember that there is going to be a painful separation stage. They're going to pull away from us. They're going to actually move away from us. But that isn't the end of our relationship with them. That is the time when we can shift our relationship to a new type of relationship, a more adult one, one where we aren't responsible for them anymore. We just need to love them and let them know we have their back. Really, much like we do with our other friends, our adult friends, right? We don't take responsibility for their life, but we love them, we care for them, we're there for them. And you know, this is way longer than I expected, so I think we're going to save the third question for the next Q&A episode. Remember that you can check out the show notes of any episode at mightyparenting.com. We have detailed notes, we have the high points of the episode, plus links to any resources that we mention, info on the guests so you can find out more about them and access their stuff. We have links to a Cree on today's episode, as well as on our sponsors tips page. So be sure to check out a Cree. I'm really impressed with what it can do. And I loved it because it also fits into this idea of encouraging our kids' independence. It's a great tool for helping them become more independent in doing their homework because they don't need us to do it. And as I said earlier, we don't fall into that trap of doing more for them than we should. So thanks for being here. Remember that you are a mighty parent, so you've got this, and I will see you next week.